found us. What about this idea?
Gotta listen to this show. Why?
Because it's about the hearts and minds of entrepreneurs. Oh,
nailed it.
I didn't even look at the
nailed
wall.
Nailed it.
I didn't even look at
all
the
right,
wall.
All right, listen. Honestly, this is a show. It's different than other shows about entrepreneurship.
It's real. It's real. Real stories.
Is it?
We tend to talk very real.
I love
and
it.
So do our guests. So come have fun with us.
Ready? 1, 2, 3. We're starting. Go.
Thought you were starting. You just said, I'm starting.
Start.
Welcome to our show.
Welcome to our show.
What about this idea?
This show is great. The name says it all. I love that part of it.
I love it too. You know, I was thinking about that over the weekend and how I always struggle with the inside the hearts and minds of entrepreneurs part.
Yeah. Well, you got it today.
Because I did get it. And it's because it's more than that, right? I think that's why I struggle with it. It's more than that. It's about really getting to know people and what the entrepreneur thinking is in everybody.
Oh.
Right?
Oh,
I'm feeling kind of schmoopy today.
You are. Well, you've had a couple of days, haven't you?
Yeah, I have had a couple of days.
Yeah, that's been this week. Okay, people can't see us yet because I've got our graphics up there.
Because
I don't like adding them in post. I like doing it now. So we have...
Here we are.
There we are. But we're showing our guests, too.
Oh,
so
good.
We have, and I've got it up now, the graphic that says, we've got Shalisa with us. And it's Demuth. Of Laurel Media and Public Relations. I read that right off the screen.
I know. Is that your real name? Because that's like a famous name. It's like you should be famous with that name.
Shalisa or Laurel?
But,
or
well, story for both.
I need to know the story about Laurel. I mean, we'll explain that. But Shalisa Demuth.
So
it sounds like a cocktail lounge. You could be singing in a cocktail lounge.
Let's get into it.
Oh, boy. I guess we're starting.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah, did you make this up?
You know, I was young to make it up at the time it was given to me. So no.
Nope. All right. It's been there all along.
It's been there
right
the whole
from
time,
day one.
The whole time.
It is a nice name.
Thank you.
It's very not, it's atypical, you know, it's different.
Yeah. I've met a few other Shalisas in my life.
Okay.
So spelled with an A. But Shalisa, my father's name is Sheldon.
Mm.
Mother's name is Lisa. And in Chicago in the 80s, when you're black, that was the thing to do.
Oh.
You still see it happen often. Yeah.
Oh, so
in our community.
So mom and dad.
Mom and dad.
I know. I remember this era. And
I think that's cool.
I think it's cool, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
So your dad's name was Sheldon Demuth.
No. So Demuth is my adopted name. That one I can't take all the credit for.
Oh, okay. Okay. Uh-huh. Yep.
So first I was Shalisa McGee.
Okay.
It's my dad's name.
Okay.
And then I was adopted by my mom's husband, my stepfather, when I was 8 years old. And it's amazing. I have an 8-year old now, and I just think of
what it was
how
like.
How fascinating. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just dive into your personal life right off the bat. Is that cool?
I'm an open book. It's okay.
Yeah, I am too. So were your folks together for any period of time?
Yeah, they were married for 2.5 years.
Okay.
And then after I was born, they split. My mom moved here from Chicago. She was raised here in Minneapolis.
Okay. So you didn't spend a ton of time with your biological parents together as parents?
No, never.
Yeah.
Not until I was 18, and then I got to know my dad and brothers.
You didn't know him really before that?
I didn't know. No, until I was an adult.
Oh.
That was another fascinating experience.
Oh, no shit. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm adopted, too.
You are?
Yeah.
Same
way. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I know. Yeah. I have a crazy adopted story that is going to take 5 seconds right now, but it could take the next 5 hours. I was adopted. I was born in Duluth. Uh-huh. My bio mom and my mom just so happened, coincidentally, to both be from Ely, Minnesota, right? And my bio mom accidentally signed some papers at the adoption agency that went through to my parents' copy. So they knew who she was my whole life. She had a boy when she was 16, gave him up for adoption. She had a girl when she was 18, kept her. She had me when she was 20, gave me up. And then she had another daughter, too.
That she and she kept the fourth one?
She kept the fourth one.
So
she kept
every other.
Every other.
Does that, wow, did you know we were going to get into this?
No, but this is fascinating.
Yeah, does that mess with you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Does it? It does. Because the two, my brother, the boy that was, we're all by different fathers. So my half-brother and I have really struggled with, what do we do with this thing? Do we bond?
You mean the two that were adopted?
Do we not bond?
The two that were given up.
Yeah.
Have struggled.
Yeah, we've struggled, like we don't know where we belong, really.
And do you feel like the other two do know where they belong?
Yeah, I think so. I think they really love their mom, and I think that they're wonderful women, and they all, they seem to have a very strong bond.
With each other.
With each other, yeah.
Wow.
I watch it all happen on Facebook.
Wow. Have you all met in person?
Yeah, that's okay. Another story.
Yeah,
that's after the break.
Okay.
After we have an alcoholic beverage in
front. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm super fascinated by this, and we, I mean, this is what about this idea? We'll get to ideas later. Let's keep on this for now.
I know. I love it. I love it.
I really am fascinated by this stuff. So my folks were divorced when I was 5, and I had an older brother, and I've got, you know, they remarried. I've got 6 new siblings from different marriages. I'm 49 and I've got a 10-year-old sister, biological half sister, you know. So mine doesn't have that same sort of, like, I did know my folks and I wasn't adopted. So your father split from the relationship, though they were married, right around the time you were born.
My mom is the one who moved on. I have a brother that's just a few months older than me by someone else. And so that was part of the reason for the split, which is TMI.
No.
But that's my family.
I get it. And so
you get it. I'm slow.
Yeah.
So you have a brother who's a few months older from another woman.
Correct.
And that's the reason for the split.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So your mom was like, enough of that.
She decided that wasn't the move for her. I love both of them dearly.
Well, that's, I love to hear that. I love every one of my siblings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do not make the distinction between half and full and stuff. Like, I love them all.
Yeah.
But so I get that. So... But DeMuth is a lot better last name than McGee. I mean, not that McGee is bad. It's a fine name, but that's what you...
I like DeMuth better, too.
Until I was 8.
Yeah.
And then my stepfather is from Cold Spring, Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. I know Cold Spring.
So that's where I grew up.
You grew up in, like, the whitest of white, mid-America.
Yes, I did.
Mid-central Minnesota. That is, like...
I was one of a few there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Deep and white... country. I'm sorry.
It's true. It's totally true.
I went to St. Cloud State.
You know.
I grew up in Elk River. There were 3 black kids in my school. It was Tracy Jacobs and his 2 younger brothers.
Yep.
And that was it. You know, like it was, yeah, I get it. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was
Cold Spring.
It's so funny because my sister and I are both adopted. My sister is Korean and I am not. But she connected very closely to the black community because she found her identity in that community. And so I've always been very, in fact, most of her community who's black, I bond with better because they all have families like me. Like they have weird stories about their families like
oh,
me.
Sure.
And it's like my life is so much more normal in that community than a bunch of white people are like, you know. Monty Python, you know.
Well, they would have hidden it all and obscured the weirdness from everybody.
Well, I always got that from white people. Like I'm talking like I'm not white, but they're like, "Wow, you're adopted. You don't know who your father is. You don't know who your family is. Oh my God, that's so crazy." And I'm like, "It's really not that crazy, you know. I still call people mom and dad."
Yep.
I have a sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's Korean, but she's the only thing I ever knew of sister.
Yep.
Not my blood sister, obviously. Not my blood brothers. So it was very normal for me, but I always felt very odd about this reaction about my world.
That's relatable. I do think that the definition of family, or perhaps how we relate to family dynamics and what we perceive as normal, has changed a bit with the introduction of Ancestry DNA, 23andMe, and those testing sites where folks are realizing, oh, my family's a lot bigger than I knew.
Did you do that?
I did, yeah.
What did you find out?
Nothing on siblings.
Oh.
Yeah, it was just what I knew.
You did, there wasn't any
there
surprises.
There weren't any juicy secrets, no.
I want to do a whole separate show. I've wanted to for years.
We should do
on,
it.
On what this all looks like since they did started the DNA testing. Because there is a weird period of time from like the 40s or 50s through sort of the tail end of the 70s where before that you just either didn't get pregnant, or if you did, you got married like that day, you know, like, and then during that time, people would like send their daughters away to the farm for a year and everyone in town kind of knew like, to the farm, huh? And then they'd have kids, and then they'd come back and they don't have kids, you know, or whatever. And things like what happened with your life. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just an interesting era.
It is. And it really re-describes what family is beyond genetic ties. Mm-hmm. You know, we're family. Family is love, right? Like my empty nester right now, I always say to my husband, I'm like,
oh, you
when you're
lonely?
Gone, my home is gone, right? Like, it's like, you're my home, I'm realizing.
Wow.
Yeah, like, you're home.
And he's like, stop being so
he's
clingy.
He's like, go away, you're so clingy. No, he doesn't. But a funny thing about 23andMe, and then we have to move on.
This isn't a show about... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I did 23andMe, right? Because my bio mom told me the name of my father. And so I wanted to find out, like, who is, he must have fathered other people. He must have brothers and sisters. But the name she gave me is nowhere in my 23andMe family tree. So I said to her, are you
research to do.
Really sure about that name? But, it has not come up.
Another mystery.
It's a mystery. It's a quandary.
So this is a show about entrepreneurial.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And no, it's okay.
That's
I love
the other
it.
Show.
Not a show about race nor about family, but I love it.
Okay, but now we have to hear it. About Laurel because I purposely didn't look it up and I'm fascinated and I want to know what about your business.
Yeah.
Yeah. How you got there.
Thanks for asking. less of an involved story. There are less pieces to why Laurel is Laurel.
Okay.
But I'm just as proud. So up until a few months ago, we lived on Laurel Avenue. And that's what I named the business after.
But
the
I love
reason it. Was,
that's perfect.
It was a story. I had a business name and we were taking our first client and I needed to set up all of our filing with the state and get a bank account, cash the check. And the group that we were working with, there's like historical context to why the name I had before was going to be a big conflict of interest. And so I was on my way to the bank with all of the paperwork, and I called my attorney and said, I just thought of this. I think this is going to be a problem. He said, yes, that's a big problem. And I said, okay, so I can't call it this. What do I call my business? We need to get going. You know, they're ready to go. They're ready to sign. And he said, what street do you live on? I said, Laurel. And so he's like, great, that's your business name. And so that's how we came up with it.
I love
it.
So an attorney who did you a solid.
Oh, yeah. My attorney is great.
That's great. Yeah. I do. Mine is I have too. Some very good attorney friends. So I love giving them shit, though.
Yeah.
Because they're attorneys. But anyway, that's what you sign up for.
So that was the event that led to the naming. But what's really interesting about the name is that that was the first home that I shared with my daughter as a single parent. And it was really transformational for us. We were there for 5 years. And we've just moved on, like I mentioned, in the last few months.
Only now what street do you live on?
Selby.
I like that name too. Maybe
that's
you need a
good name.
A little kitty named Selby.
Or a fish.
Or fish. Oh, I could have a fish here named Selby. There you go.
We are going to have a fish named Shelby.
Selby.
Selby. Yeah. The one that you brought us.
I did bring you a fish today.
But I want to name it Laurel. Can we?
We can have two names.
It's your fish.
It can be Laurel Selby.
There you go.
We can put a little plaque above it.
Okay, so I want to hear about the business. I want to hear about what your business does. I'm extra interested in how you got there because it's just the look of it makes me want to work with you. Like I need to work with you. I decided.
Thank you. You're excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is an honor to be able to work with the people that we do. It's a public relations agency, but not your traditional public relations agency, because if the beginning of this conversation didn't shed any light on where we're headed, not a whole lot about life for me has been traditional or conventional. And so before, that was something that I ran from and tried to assimilate the best I could and blend in. And I grew up in a place where it wasn't very easy for me to blend in.
No, so I know what you mean. Like, I know it firsthand what you mean. Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
And so I decided to own it. And parts of growing up, you know, there was the aspect of being Black growing up in a white community that was very lovely. And I'm so grateful for where I was raised.
Totally.
There's also the aspect that my family was a blended biracial evangelical, coming into a German Catholic community to start a new church situation. So there's
a
lot of layers.
Yeah,
too. Being disruptive is really what it was. And so,
of course.
While the parts of those that aren't genetically a part of me didn't stick, I'm no longer evangelical. A lot of what I experienced being disruptive and needing to find connection points with folks that weren't visible or perhaps weren't the first thing to mind when they thought of me. That was a big introduction in communication and being really strategic and how you connect with folks. And, and so I would say from a really young age, this was almost predestined. I knew that to some degree or in some capacity, I would be helping folks to relate their messages to people who need to meet them.
Well, you've been PRing yourself for a long time.
I sure have.
It's in your blood. I mean, you must have, really. I mean, to survive, yeah, it's a lovely community, and there was a lovely cause. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sure, you were being disruptive, but in a way of God, you know? And so I don't really know what evangelicals believe in, so.
So it's
I'm just assuming it's God.
It's okay. Christian faith.
Oh my gosh. You're learning so much on this show. It's like, I love this one. It's different already.
Well, it's our life shapes what we do,
it
right?
Does.
I want to hear your take on what, so evangelical.
Evangelical.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Evangelism.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's a Christian religion. It's closely tied to Pentecostal. The denomination specifically that I was a part of was the Assemblies of God. And
I've seen that sign.
Yeah, or if you've seen like Jesus Camp, some of the things that I attended as a kid were like that.
That was a big deal. I can't ask your age. This is not.
I'm 35.
This is not an interview. You can ask her.
I know, but you're not supposed to. Like, you have to be very cautious.
So the game is, no matter what age you think they are, you guess 5 years younger. Always.
Well, you just go with like 23. You know, like if you're a dude, you just like, very, very cautious about this.
Very safe.
No, but the Assembly of God church, I don't know if they're still as popular now as they were, but when I was young, they were really making that push out into rural Minnesota. I just remember them. You were a part of that.
Yep. My family was a part of that. And so what I took from it, first, my parents gave me a lot of opportunities to travel abroad. So they knew that the community that I was living in maybe wasn't reflective of all the different parts of me that they were strategic themselves about, keeping a little bit obscured, specifically my heritage being Black American. And so they were really good about providing opportunities to attend missions trips and do things. But the mission never quite sat right with me. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't articulate why. And so that was a quest in my 20s, was to understand why didn't that feel right when we were going to those places and sharing what we shared? Like, none of that. So oftentimes I would sit out. I would help to the degree that I committed to or needed to. But as for sharing, I was more interested in asking questions. And so it wasn't until I got to college that I recognized that that would be like cultural anthropology.
Sure.
Understanding other folks and trying to create understanding between groups. And so I've always...
You felt a little more isolated in those moments in those smaller towns. Is that what you're...
Yeah.
Like I'm just trying to make sense of it, you know, because I...
Wrong or othered is maybe words that I would associate with that, where there was a sense of coming in to fix things for a community mm-hmm. that was already functioning. And that just didn't sit right with me. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until I got older and learned, well, yeah, there's an element of, you know, there's an element of, I'm at a loss for words, I guess, but there are elements of patriarchy or perhaps elements of, supremacy.
Right.
Just that
we know better.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the whole tribe of the Christians mm-hmm. with that. We've all been evangelical. Every Christian faith has been.
Yeah.
It tried to sell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tried to evangelize. Others. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's how it's spread. That's why there's Christians all over the world. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because people sought out this story, as they were given the story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're talking about religion. I think it's safe, right?
It's safe.
I mean, I don't feel like we're not trying to convert anyone. I'm really curious about all of this stuff, and I don't always understand all of the subtle nuances. Like I have a lot of knowledge about certain parts of it, but like the, you know, what it feels like to be in those positions is mm-hmm. not necessarily something I don't have a lot of empathy mm-hmm. with it yet, you know? Yeah. So if I'm asking questions, it's because I'm sincerely curious about like what, you know, who was, so like you're in those communities feeling like you're like, when you got to college, you realized that you were engaging in cultural anthropology. Is that what you're saying?
I realized that that was the aspect of it that I appreciated and that I would like to do more of. But that in itself has a lot of holes in it, and where the study of, you know, or the practice of cultural anthropology originates from has some of those same values of white supremacy.
I mean, for sure. Whoever writes the story gets to write the story exactly. the way they want to write the story. That's, I mean, it's true. It's just absolutely the way it works.
Yeah, it's very true. And so that realization, it took me some time to tie that back to communications. But what I realized as I observed the world from a vantage point that was dissociated from a lot of mm-hmm. those values, from religion, from wanting to better places, and instead approached it from curiosity and connection, human connection. Okay, how do we take those good things? And that's how I ended up in communications.
This is the most altruistic
story. You know what I mean? Like you really dug for what lit you up, mm-hmm. right? You dug for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tripped and fell in puddles and across the countries. And like, I was never like, I was more in the mode, I'm never going to find it, right? Nothing feels right, you know, but you were really discerning it down. You were taking what really felt right and going with it, and then finding all those other things that match that rightness.
It's a lot of introspection.
Yeah.
A lot of failure along the way. Mm-hmm. It was and time, of course. I spent a lot of time falling down and and saying the wrong words, or, you know, having conversations with folks to try to figure out what it was for me, and trying on a lot of different industries and roles and participating in the ways that I needed to, but knowing, no, this isn't quite it. And so to be with you today and feel like, no, I found it. It arrived at it for
You've made it because you're on the What About This Idea show.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I love it. That's it.
You know, you made it when.
Oh, yeah. I mean, You've arrived at it.
Well, I think it's more that we're riding on your success, hoping it rubs off a little on us.
Oh, that's cute too. I like it all because I really we've done what 7-8 episodes now or something, and everyone's interesting. I love every person we've had in has the ability to answer questions that I have in my mind about like a different way of life. So, you know, if the show is supposed to be about about this idea and about, is it entrepreneurism or entrepreneurialism?
Oh
God. Cause I feel like I'm saying it wrong all the time, but then I feel like other people are saying it wrong.
Entrepreneurialism.
You know what? We'll have to find another professor. No.
Entrepreneurialism.
I think it's entrepreneurialism, but it could be entrepreneurism.
Tell us.
Well,
let us know.
I usually use entrepreneurship.
Crap. That one I know is right.
Yeah,
that's right.
You can be entrepreneurial.
You can be.
Yeah.
Yep.
And isms, doesn't it seem like a disease or something?
Well, don't you feel sometimes afflicted by a disease?
I am definitely afflicted by a disease.
Like, I can't help myself. Okay, so all of what was just said, I get it. We're not trying to, this is not, again, not a show where we're trying to, like, right all the wrongs and figure, like, make sense of everything. But if I take this role sometimes where, like, I grew up in Elk River. I lived a lot of different places. I spent a lot of time, half my childhood down in Madison, which was a much, much more culturally mixed community. Really appreciate that. Elk River, I always say there were three people with brown skin, but no, there were more. I just, you know, there were a few more. But anyway, but I have a lot of friends. So, like, we're not going to have a lot of, let's say, people who aren't interested in kind of what we're talking about listening to this show. But if they were, how could we condense that down into, like, language that maybe makes more sense if you're not in that world of speaking in those terms? Do you know what I'm saying?
But what?
About, well, I know that's overly complicated, but seriously, I think of it like my cousins in the country or something, mm-hmm. right? They hear what we're talking about and like bettering communities and just sort of the language that we use to talk about this stuff. And I feel like the divide isn't so much that we don't all want the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's that we talk in different ways.
Yeah.
And you grew up, and this is why I'm asking you specifically, because you grew up in Cold Spring, which is right in that same place. So like if I were to condense it down, I'd say you came to the community and we were, you know, well, I don't know if that's the right way to do it. I maybe should think about things before.
Do you need a beer or something?
Is my brain broken? It does not make sense.
I think your brain is broken.
I mean, I think there's a simpler, there's like this complicated way of trying to make sense of the world that we are immersed in and we talk in these terms. And then there's this sort of simpler way that people are like, well, I don't know, I get along with everybody and it's all fine. Like where are we missing each other?
So something that comes up between my mom and my stepdad often is, you know, when I have conversations with my mom, we'll get deep into the weeds on issues and feelings and, you know, the ins and outs of relationships, not always. And as she's developed professionally too, that's been an interesting rise to watch. Her communication has changed a lot, but she and I will talk for, you know, hours at a time sometimes. Mm-hmm. Where my stepdad loves to say things like, oh, why didn't you just say it like that in the first place? So I feel like
I think
what you're
that's
asking,
kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah, yes. Think of me as your stepdad. Like, yeah. can we shut up with all the words and just, what are you saying?
Yeah.
Like that.
What's the formula?
She got it. Shalisa understood me.
I feel like I need to places. Rewind this conversation. Yeah.
Thank you. We do come from
similar
places.
We come from similar places.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get there's like the complex way of saying it where you really get into the all the little minutiae of why things happen, who's feeling what way, how that affects another person.
Yeah.
And then there's the stepdad's way, which is just like, so what was that all about?
Yeah.
You know, like just tell me what just give me the meat of it.
Yep.
Don't yeah.
Yeah, the details.
Yeah.
But I think when we're coming into new communities, whether it's for an entrepreneurial venture or something like what I was a part of growing up, understanding that you can be there to learn and you can be there curious. That's better received when you're curious about language and cultural norms and how you can be additive. And some groups, some folks, some companies do this really well. And others, it's pretty evident when folks are a little bit more loud and bold and sure of being right. And so I think it's less about being right and converting folks to what you feel is right for them, and more about learning where they're at and how you can maybe improve as a result of the community that you've entered. So
agreed. And commonalities, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes down to it, we're all human beings. We are 99.9% exactly the same. Uh-huh. And so we all have similar, it's like when we first started, we talked about being adopted, right? Like, I could take that with me forever in our relationship, yeah. Right? It's the point of commonality that we can always build on. And it's true for any relationship.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's those connection points. And those parts of our identity that make us special. We talked a little bit before the recording about what we do professionally day to day. And, you know, there are plenty of folks who might be in talent acquisition or plenty of folks who might be in public relations, but it is who you connect with and who's willing to share their story enough to create those connection points.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Vulnerability is so important.
It is.
And that is, you know, people say take a risk. Mm-hmm. Being an entrepreneur means taking a risk. Mm-hmm. And if you think that through, it's not like, you know, don't jump off a cliff without a parachute. That's not the kind of risk we're talking about.
I mean, sometimes.
I mean, okay.
Most. Well, you did, getting into this show.
I did, actually.
Yeah. Who are you to talk?
But it wasn't a cliff. It was like, okay. You know, it wasn't a cliff.
It was a little hill.
It was a little hill. Yeah. I jumped right off.
Yeah.
But it is mostly about vulnerability.
Yeah.
It's mostly about being willing to be someone different so you can do that thing. And the only way to do that is to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Oh, I think you
helped me understand it, honestly. I think you did a very nice job of explaining that. And I think what the difference from like the stepdad, you know, middle-aged white dude way of thinking of it is it's the difference between And why men got in so much trouble for mansplaining everything forever, because they didn't go in with any curiosity.
Yeah.
They went in with the answers. Mm-hmm. And what this conversation was more about, like the curiosity of going in with a bunch of questions and genuinely trying to figure out, like, so what are you thinking about things, and letting people come to their own conclusions or helping inform your opinions by understanding them before explaining stuff to them, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And sharing their experiences too. When you enter a relationship, when you're able to share about you and you're not just listening to, you know, the person on the other side of the table from you share all about where they come from and what's important and what they believe. But it really is an exchange. That's so validating. And so when we
That's so true. Mm-hmm. Someone said that to me about receiving, mm-hmm. right? In that I'm a giver, right? Like if we were just meeting, we were introduced and we had a little networking, we're going to set up a half hour with each other, I would be so up in your grill of business. Like, tell me what you're doing. Tell me more about how I can help you. What are you looking for? Oh my gosh, I have like 4 introductions to make you. And the 30 minutes will go by and they haven't asked me a single thing about myself, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the problem. I probably never gave them that space.
I think that's true.
Right? Because I was so excited about them. But you can't properly give unless you're willing to receive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And silence is something that we're not always comfortable with in our culture here in Minnesota. I love silence. I love the pregnant pause. I love you just taking a minute to think about what, you know, what might be happening, thinking about the situation, considering things. And it makes some people really uncomfortable, but people who know me well know that they can expect in our conversations, yeah, there will be silence and questions and
that's
laughter.
Okay.
And yeah, and that's all a part of the human experience. Got to make space for it.
That's right. I've learned that a bit with my husband because he's a very slow processor.
Okay.
And so I have to make long periods of...
So the balance is there.
Sam's laughing.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
There you go, Forrest.
I love and adore you, yes, honey.
That's what you say after
this
that.
Is assuming he listens to my
no,
podcast.
No, he's not watching.
No, he's not listening.
You can't expect that of a spouse. Like, hey, honey, you know how much you love me? Do you want to watch hours of me talking into a camera? Well, we'll take a little break at the middle here. I don't know. It ties into what we're doing because, a lot of the shows that I've seen about entrepreneurialism or entrepreneurism, we're not sure. They are very much like two people explaining to you how they succeeded. And this show is all about but we have a whole bunch of questions for you and we really want to get to know you. It's different. And
yeah.
So for me, this is from what I can tell our natural state. Like we haven't known each other that long, but this is what we do. Like I love asking questions of people and figuring out what their life is like. And
the greatest thing about this show, it allows us to go where we need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you were saying about a pregnant pause, right? Like if you leave that pause, then the path creates itself, right? Someone thinks about it or you think about it or
and if
we have time to process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're always trying to if you know the whole conversation in your head before you're having it, then you're missing the point.
Exactly. You know? You're just talking. You're just pontificating.
Ooh, talk, talk, talk.
All right, we're taking a break.
Okay.
All right. Excited about a break.
Break time.
I feel like you need a beer.
Of course I do.
All right.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
I don't need it.
No, you don't need it. There's no need here.
Yeah. Okay, break time.
Here you are.
You've
made it to the middle of the show. Buckle up because second half is going to be even.
It's different.
It's
very always
different.
The little train goes off the rails or whatever. The whole bus.
It usually does. By the second half, we're relaxed.
It's coming.
Here it comes.
Yeah. I talk too much. Middle. See ya.
Bye.
Have fun. We are rolling again. What about this idea with Shalisa DeMuth?
Which is the coolest name.
I know.
Shalisa DeMuth.
Too kind.
No.
I mean, there are other cool names. To be fair, there are other cool names.
A lot of
I'm not trying to make you feel uncomfortable.
Like Sam Divine.
That works. Juliet Fox is pretty good.
All cool names.
Great names.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean... like you, I adopted mine later in life. I took my wife's name when we were married.
Did he really?
Yeah. I've told this, so I'll make it brief. But yeah, she was the death of her lineage. Third daughter to a man who's an only child. Name ends with her.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, there's a lot of Teasons in the world. Why wouldn't we go ahead and I'll just take your name? So
that is very cool.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I try. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, her dad was like, no. That's dumb. Men don't take girls' names. Like, Bernie, I can handle it. It'll be fine. So, anyway.
If you can wear that shirt, you can handle anything.
You know why I wore this today? I would appreciate if either of you ladies look at me and just say, you look dumb. Like, if I look like
don't
an
look
idiot
dumb.
Today.
You look happy and fresh. Look, we're like the black twins.
Yeah.
And I put on a t-shirt under it because it's got some scratchy stuff on the side. I'm like, ouch, I don't want to be irritated all day. But no, if I looked dumb, I looked at my pathetic wardrobe there that I looked at. You know, you look at these things a million times and I'd like to maybe dress better or whatever. And I'm like, that one brightens my day. I'm putting it on because everyone's like been so down lately.
Yeah. Get into it. The sun is shining.
Yeah.
The shirt is floral.
Yeah.
It's a great day.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I appreciate mm-hmm. that,
That's
Shalisa.
Good.
I appreciate it very much. So
I would like to hear Can I ask the question?
Of course, yeah.
Because I feel like every time I'm about to ask it, you have a better question.
Oh, that's very. That was really kind. I don't. No, I think you're good. I like the questions you ask.
I'm actually really excited about how you then formed your own business, mm-hmm. what you did to learn all the bits and pieces and parts that you felt comfortable then being an entrepreneur, or even how comfortable you were, mm-hmm. and. Definitely. What is your approach? Because I know it's different because I read it on your website.
Feels like learnings could happen.
Yeah. And I'm also, you highlight some of your clients and I know them and they do shine. Mm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's the most important part, of course, is that we're effective and the people we have the opportunity to serve feel like they are taken care of and they're connecting their message with folks who need them and will help their business grow. And so, yeah, it's kind of a long story, but
we're here for you.
The idea was
I'm going to ask questions during the middle.
Okay.
Only for two reasons, to break you up. Because you've probably told this story a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And if I have questions along the way, I don't want to really lose them. And this is the part that I find, this is our show. How do you start something mm-hmm. when you don't have a business? How do you start it? So if I have questions along the way, I'll break it up.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you. Okay.
I guess it's aligned that we started with talking about family, because a lot of my introduction to entrepreneurship was my stepdad. Mm. And so watching him be a partner in a business that created jobs for the community and allowed our family opportunities to travel, and seeing him build something together with partners. He's also an inventor, so he was not traditionally trained or classically trained as an engineer, but that ended up being the part that he educated himself on. Mm.
And this is your stepfather, correct?
This is my stepfather that raised me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I'm very grateful to him for that example.
When did he come into your life? Like what era?
She was 8 years old.
When I was adopted by him, but they actually married when I was 3. So he's pretty.
Okay, so you've never really known.
Growing up, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got like your eyes are smiling as you talk about this person.
He's wonderful.
Okay.
Just a wonderful person.
Love it.
I'm also really grateful because, you know, with societal pressure, being a woman in business, being a Black woman in business, oftentimes there's this audacity that white men walk around with, and you know, whether that's trained or there's a lot that we could get into on societal expectations and societal allowances, but we don't need to.
Well, we did at the beginning.
We did. And so I think it's really interesting having my mom, who's a Black woman, as an example, and then my stepdad, who's a white man, as an example. Those are the people that shaped me and molded me and raised me. And so you know, I took her discernment and his audacity, and that's how I move about the world. And so in some ways that's really unique, considering who I represent and where I come from. And so there's a lot of magic and excellence, but I feel my community, being the Black community, we're still coming into our audacity in a lot of ways and not asking for permission and really owning leadership. And that's such an exciting time to be representing people who are saying yes to their audacity.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I'm almost 50, so I've watched kind of like when I grew up, they would get in front of the entire class of people, no matter what the mix, right, of skin colors and racial backgrounds and ethnic backgrounds and all these different things. And they would say, every single one of you can do whatever you dream of, whatever you want in life. You have the power. And I bought it, hook, line, and sinker. I was like, everybody here is awesome, and you can all do whatever you want. Like, I really thought that was a reality. And then I grew up and started to realize that you know, a lot of the things that they say about, like, you know, it's especially true that, like, white people start out ahead in the race of in life and stuff. And I understand all that. And I think that what I've witnessed in the last 15, 20 years is the writing of that wrong. And it's probably been coming for a much longer period of time, but you're seeing the results of it. And so the audacity side is funny to me, because you say audacity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's that white privilege, which has gotten to be now kind of a bad term in some circles and good in others and whatever, you know, or what, I don't know how that works. But anyway, but yes, walking into a situation feeling like you belong there is what I think what you're talking about when you say audacity, right?
Yeah. And we've always known that we're capable of so much and we achieve so much. Black women are the highest educated group of citizens in the United States.
Right.
Like really, we are excellent in so many ways. But that was something that I took in my personal experience growing up is watching someone move through the world without a lot of resistance. He still worked very, very hard. And so that was another thing that I learned.
It's fair.
Yeah, from his work ethic. But it was fascinating to me to, to witness somebody's rise and growth.
And this is your stepfather.
Almost unencumbered. Yeah.
This reminds me of Trevor Noah's book. Have you read that, his book?
Parts of it. I haven't finished it yet.
Okay. But, pieces that made sense. It was people would treat him, because he was mulatto, mm-hmm. right? So he, in South African terms.
Mixed. Yep.
Yep. And
this is another thing that keeps people from being able to talk about this stuff is not knowing all the right terms and sometimes worrying that you're going to offend someone or so, right? Like, but mulatto is okay. Like, that's from that. He calls himself that from South Africa, correct?
South Africa, it has a weird situation where black people are actually, if you looked at the hierarchy, it's obviously white people at the front and at the top, but then black people are second. Mulatto people are pretty much on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so he was not allowed to walk with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't allowed to walk side by side with her.
Because she's black.
Because he was lesser.
Or she was white.
And she could not admit having him as a child.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Wow.
And his father was Swiss.
Wow.
And so the times he would talk about how people would treat him, even when he came over to the States, and then as soon as they would see that he was that he was associated with a white person,
mm-hmm.
they would treat him completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that you had that experience.
Well, and that's what's so interesting. There's an aspect of conditioning, right? How we're conditioned societally to
of course.
Behave and what we believe our place is as a result of how where we're raised and who raises us and what we see. That's the reason representation is so powerful. I'll never forget, while there have been many instances of representation in media, and you know, I did a book report on Oprah Winfrey when I was in the seventh grade, and that changed how I looked at women in media. And but if we're not hearing those stories, we don't know who to write about, and the same voices and the same appearances or the same backgrounds get championed. And so that's really why I believe the work that I do in public relations and leaders who are stepping up either for causes, you know, or creating businesses that are changing culture, changing the way that we live our lives. There are so many unique disruptors that are at play and don't get mentioned or aren't recognized. But that representation in the ways that we connect, whether that's racially or in some other aspect of how we live our lives, it's so powerful.
Totally.
And so source diversity is really a big focus for us at Laurel, is considering how do we champion these voices that might be the first to do something in an industry or a field or doing things differently, because it's incredibly powerful and it changes how we're conditioned, because now we can see an example of something that we have in common with a leader.
Someday we're going to have a female president. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to happen. And then every little girl who's ever born in America or whatever after that can look and say, oh, well, you had a female president, so I could do that. Like, in the absence of those things happening, it's not like, not to make, you know, this all about race, it's not like black people in America haven't been entrepreneurial from the start.
Oh, absolutely.
Completely and utterly entrepreneurial.
Mm-hmm.
It's that they, you know, there's been a lot of systems put in place over the years to keep them from succeeding too much
exactly.
at being entrepreneurial.
Exactly.
And, you know, so at some point we'll get to a place where the examples have been set, the things are okay. And now, and it will never get to a time where it's everything's on merit alone, because people are always a little tribal and weird about shit. Mm-hmm. But it won't be that one group is always going to win at everything, and the other groups have to fight for the rest of whatever that is.
Right.
Like, does that make sense? Like, yeah. I don't know if I said that very clearly, but yeah, it's...
Well, I mean, pretty soon, white people are going to be a they already are a minority in the world.
But eventually that's not going to, like... I mean, the end result of the homogenization of society is that we stop making it about white, black, the rest of it. And not because you're looking beyond race or we're in a raceless society, but because we all look at ourselves and we're like, oh, we're all human. Mm-hmm. And so let's let each other just be human, and then we'll play our weird little tribal games, because there's already plenty of instances where, like in corporate America, skin color is less important in certain ways. Not corporate America, in certain parts.
I was gonna say.
In certain parts of corporate America, where, like some of our suburbs are filled with people who all work at Optum or something, right? And the thing that binds them is that they all work at Optum. So the neighbors. They're like, oh, this racial thing's done, right? Like, because in their small corner of the world, it is, but it doesn't mean it is actually done. You know, I don't know. It's just my thoughts on. But anyway, entrepreneurialism is a massive part of everybody's existence as humans. So
how did you end up not discounting that? Thank you for exploring that.
I don't know.
Not sure I understood it, but
I'm not sure I understood it either.
Well, how did you get? Did you work in other PR firms before you started your business?
Never, no.
What?
So I never worked for an agency. The way that I got into things, I went to college in Florida, and I was there for 2 years, and decided that that wasn't the move for me. It was a very religious school. My parents said you could go anywhere in the country as long as it's affiliated with our religion. And I wanted to study biology. So I said, okay, let me look at who has biology programs. I was going to be pre-med. And ideally, I wanted a place with a beach. And so there was a school in Florida. Said, that's the one.
God, I love the way kids pick things.
I know.
Perfect.
Really? Biology, beach. Well, okay, I'll throw in the religion. Got it. Like, there's one. I found it.
So that's how I got my start. But I knew I wanted to be in a place that was different than where I grew up and have some cultural experiences that were. So that,
that's not hard.
No, I know.
Everything's different than Cold Spring. But anyway. It's all good.
But I ended up in Central Florida, so it wasn't that different.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway.
Just warmer. Just alligators.
Yeah, right.
Other than that.
But I went there, and then I came home after 2 years, decided that wasn't the fit, and took some time, worked retail for a while. And so that was how I ended up getting into go-to-market strategies, was working with stores that were opening.
Okay.
New locations, and so learning from their corporate experience, that taught me a lot about go-to-market communication. And so definitely a boots on the ground, trial and error, being a part of things and learning on the job is how I eventually ended up where I was. But I started my first business when I was 20. And it was a colossal failure.
Yay!
There was no structure to it. I was helping some people with their communications, but, you know, it was 2009, I think.
Well, you were 20. I mean, the expectations have to be reasonable, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard.
But I had seen an example in my family, of course, of entrepreneurship and done some things and worked in the family business a little bit. And so I thought, oh yeah, this could definitely be helpful. I'm grateful for the people who were patient with my efforts. It was small projects,
nice, yeah.
But that's how you get started, is you try something.
It's all a big experiment anyway.
It is.
Yeah.
You learn from what you can do better. And so I ended up shutting down that business. Simultaneously, I was never, ever doing it. One thing at a time. It was always, you know, five different things I was involved in. So I was doing the retail work and go to markets, and I was running this consulting business, and then I was also volunteering at a lot of nonprofit organizations. And so I was building up a really powerful network. And so that's another thing that nobody told me to do that, but it was just kind of natural because I was curious.
They told me to do that in college, and I thought it was like, I thought that it was all false.
Oh.
But you were doing it the natural and real way. And you know what I mean? But when they
nobody
say,
got to tell me, you know?
Well, when it's sort of like an assignment in class, start networking.
Yeah.
It's like, well, then you mean like I have to pretend to know these people and like, I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'll network this way. Mm-hmm. I'll get to know you. Like now when I see you in the future, I know you,
right.
You know, like this is different. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were out networking for real by volunteering.
Help. Yeah. Volunteering with nonprofit organizations. And so that also taught me a bit about events management and how go-to-markets for that looks and corporate communications and internal communications. Like really any project folks were throwing at me. It was like a 7-year internship is kind of what I said yes to.
Yeah,
right?
That's life. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to learn and I knew it wasn't going to be in a classroom for me based on what I experienced. And so that's what I said yes to. And so from there, it was a nonprofit organization that introduced me to the first startup that I worked with here in Minneapolis. And so they did a makers market. It was the American Refugee Committee at the time. Now it's called Alight. They were doing a makers market for their annual gala. And I think it was the third or fourth year that I had helped with the gala. And they brought in a company called Woodchuck USA. Maybe you've heard of them. Mm. They're local. They've scaled quite a bit. I think they're in year 9, maybe.
What do they do?
They do custom wood products, like coasters and journals, a lot of corporate gifting, custom packaging.
Okay. I think I maybe have heard.
Yeah, but they use lasers to cut out wood products. Anyway, I met the founders at this nonprofit event. And at the time, I was doing the go-to-market with the team from David Yurman. And so that was the last retail job that I worked.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. So I kind of worked my.
That's really cool.
Did you say my way wow up to David Yurman?
Yurman, yeah.
I have no idea what that is.
Okay. You should know that.
Why?
Because he makes jewelry.
Why would I know that?
I don't know.
I don't know. No, I'm sure it's great, but how would I know?
In the same realm as like a Tiffany and Company.
Oh, yes, like that I do know.
In the Galleria. They are across the hall from each other.
They are.
Oh,
Tiffany and David Yurman.
And we're talking in Edina, that Galleria, the one that I hardly ever enter because it's too fancy for me.
Yes.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
It is kind of fancy. It's fun to be.
Yeah, no, it's a nice place. I have been
there's
in there.
There's a Starbucks.
They
in
let
there.
Me in.
It's very welcoming.
Yeah.
I think there's a steak shop too.
They used to have a store that sold super fancy high-end knobs and fixtures.
I remember that.
I'm like, man, how can you make it in this world selling super high-end fancy knobs and fixtures? And they did for a long time.
When folks have a need to be so niche.
Yeah. It was so cool. It was like, you know, when you're driving through a neighborhood and they have the bead store and you're like, how in the hell do you make it selling beads? These people were like, oh, you want to see expensive beads? That's us. Because it's about as pointless, you know, in a certain way. Not that either of them are pointless. They're both great. But there's an equivalency. One's just like super high end, weird, small trinkets.
Uh-huh.
The other one's little inexpensive trinkets. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so you worked for them. You gained all of the knowledge necessary to start your own business, and now you've been in business for a few years.
Yeah. So there was one company, consulting company that I started with partners, and that was also really helpful. And so the timeline goes, I was working with the nonprofits and opening the David Yurman store with the team. I learned a lot about customer service and luxury sales there, and so that taught me more about communication and being curious.
Which you already had to have had some of your own.
I did, but it formalized it. Sure. So they took us through some of the Ritz-Carlton best practices.
Oh, for cool.
It was very cool. So it's a family-owned company that was going corporate at the time. And to be a part of some of that transition, too, even boots on the ground in a store setting where you were doing a smaller go-to-market. I wasn't on their marketing team. I was within their retail side of things. But I was always observing. So to be a constant learner. I think all entrepreneurs have that in common.
I think it is very common amongst entrepreneurs.
Okay,
yes.
Not all.
Well, no, I think it is. I mean, I can't say all. I mean, all is yes, but no, it really is because the story you're telling, like, do you think this was baked into you? Do you think had you not watched your stepfather go through these things that this wouldn't have been there? Or do you think that this was part of who you were from the get-go?
Both.
Yeah.
I believe it would have taken me much longer to go out on my own as a result of his example and knowing that it was possible and you didn't have to have all of the details in order to
love it.
Just go do it.
Had it not been modeled for you, the nagging, persisting feeling like you should be doing something mm-hmm. probably would have been in the background.
Definitely.
Yeah. Did you say that your stepdad did engineering type things, but he wasn't an engineer?
Yeah.
He
came into it as it was needed of him.
It was okay.
His business. Yeah. It was okay to not, mm-hmm. To not formally be trained. But he supplemented and of course, in communication, being really open and then finding folks in the community who had those skills, mm-hmm. And understanding what his role was in order to be able to bring those people into the business, being boosting revenue and, you know, expanding the business. And so, he was such a phenomenal example to me and fast-tracked me to being able to be 35 and be building this PR agency.
Okay, so now you have this PR agency.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had it for 5 years, did you say?
So technically seven.
Seven.
But we incorporated and I moved to building a team and services and things in 2019.
And so how many people do you have working for you?
So it's just two of us, and then we have a very large database of contractors that come in on demand. I did take some time to run an organization that you're both probably familiar with here in Minneapolis. From 2022 to the middle of last year, I was the executive director at Beta in Twin Cities Startup Week.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Beta.
That's how we met, isn't it? Yeah, right?
Well,
there's some connections there.
Yeah, I interviewed Adam Cho a while back. He was with Beta. Do you know Adam?
Yeah, Adam is great.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Beta's a big, you know, they've got a presence, we'll say
a
that.
A definite presence.
So you did that for a while.
You just popped in as the executive director. Popped in.
I had a layover. No, I'm playing.
Okay, yeah, it's kind of a question, isn't it?
So that came to be... you know, you talk about positive thinking and abundance. Being from Minnesota, one thing that I always found unique, we have great stories being told internally, but I feel sometimes we're hesitant to be a part of larger conversations.
No kidding.
Yeah, and you know that me as an instigator and just being pretty audacious with things that I say yes to and commit to. That was always within me. How do I ensure the great people I've met growing up that live here get their stories told on bigger platforms than what we might be comfortable with? What I've learned is it just takes asking and building up that confidence. There are plenty of people who are doing things in big ways for themselves, but that was my focus, was how can we find ease to these larger national or global platforms for entrepreneurs especially, but thought leaders and just the brilliant people who are here in the state.
We don't do a lot of showboating in this.
We don't.
In the upper Midwest.
No.
Like it's just
But we not. Should. Everybody wants to hire us, so mm-hmm. because we're such hard workers.
Oh, I know. Hard workers who are just quietly like, okay, I'll get that done, boss. And then like, you know, like
humble Joe.
Yeah, right. Like, did anyone recognize that I did the whole thing? No, you guys all had lunch?
Okay, that's
okay,
fine.
Cool. Like, oh, it looks like you played games the whole time. I did it. I fixed everything. It's upper Midwestern thing. Like,
it's cultural here.
It is cultural.
It's in a part of the culture.
No, it's really hard hard to drag people out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
So
what's your secret sauce?
Oh. The secret sauce. you know, we...
Is it... You can't ask that? Then it's not a secret anymore.
She knows what I'm talking about. It's her value proposition,
yeah.
Right? Like what it is... I have so many questions. So from the profiles, some of the amazing profiles mm-hmm. that you have worked with...
Mm-hmm.
Do you discern the type of people that you work with? I mean, are they
selective?
Usually doing something for a cause?
not always impact-driven. So for a while, we were positioned as an impact-driven firm. That was part of the way that I ended up at Beta was in 2021, I was a part of a leadership mastermind that encouraged me to set goals and visions for the end of the year in a certain way. And so there were three major goals, but one of them was to be affecting at least 100 startup founders a year. Because those are the most disruptive.
You set that for yourself or you set that as a part of Beta?
I set that for Laurel.
For Laurel.
As the leader of Laurel in 2021, I set these goals. And so one was to be affecting more startup founders a year because of go-to-market strategy that startups often require. It's different than a small business.
It's so different to navigate
corporate
that
product
world.
Launches. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so recognizing that we wanted to do that, and then also wanted to be in-house at a VC or an accelerator program before the end of 2021. So I expected that we would be in-house communications or public relations or something more specific to our capacity. Instead, I got the call for the directorship, and it was days after I had sent messages to my to the group chat saying, hey, I just saw this article posted, and I think we're missing an opportunity to champion Black entrepreneurship here because we know all of these folks are doing great things, but we keep meeting pockets of other Black founders who haven't met these other founders. And so how are we connecting as a state? And then this thing came up, and I was approached for the directorship role. And so
you were like, well,
let me figure some
things. 5 minutes each
week. Let me see if I have time.
Let me figure something.
I could do it in that time, 5-6 minutes. That's
maybe.
All. You could do all of this before breakfast.
Yeah, it does. It does feel like you've taken on a lot, but
you're not doing that anymore, right?
No. So I exited last July.
Okay.
And it was a really great exercise in community building. The program itself is affecting a lot of founders, both through fundraising and entrepreneurship education. And so to see that at a really high level and to work together with community and partners to achieve what we did, we doubled the community size in the time that I was there. It was only 18 months, but we went from 25,000 to 50,000 and connected founders from new communities and groups that the organization hadn't affected before or really hadn't been in conversation with. Brought those groups of founders in for events that are now a sustainable part of the community and active. And so we connected founders with $17 million in venture capital funds in 2022 alone. Like, we really just kept it running.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was really fun work, but it required every part of my leadership and then some, filling in the gaps either with great talent or
and you're like, I want to be on the other side of this desk. Right?
Well, and I had been before I stepped into it. And so
you wanted to focus.
I knew I needed to get back to comms because that's
where the most impact is. Two questions that have been, I'll just ask one, but okay. So like your website and your company, Laurel Media, like, when you go there, is it clear what you do? Like, do you have it listed so that, it, like, if I went to it not knowing anything about it, I don't have to read a whole lot of words, and I can get to a point where I'm like, I understand what these people offer, because this is a trend that I've seen. It's been around for a while, but like, there's so much weird obscuring of what the actual mission of the company is and what you actually provide.
Yeah.
In certain companies, and I'm like, well, that was a whole bunch of words. Now I have no clue.
It's absolutely clear.
I just ever so much appreciate going to something and they're like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Yeah. And I think it's powerful to be able to niche down more and more as you understand who you affect best and who you align best with. So on the website currently, there are three ways that are listed that we work with folks. We work with brands, we work with leaders, and we work with events. I would say even that is too wide.
But you might, as a person going to that site, you're hopefully going to know which one of those you are.
Which you need.
Right, yeah, yeah, right.
Do I need personal
help? Then we can get a little more in depth. Yep.
Yep. So as it stands today, we have zeroed in on what we've identified as who we're able to affect in to the greatest degree. And so that is emerging leaders. And so that could be folks who are either doing something in an industry that hasn't been done before, or perhaps folks who are starting something new, like the entrepreneurs that you have here on this podcast. And so we're working with them both in a personal brand capacity. So how do you become self-possessed enough and understand the parts of you and what you can champion and how you connect with the right audiences who are going to say, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense or could align. And so helping those folks both understand themselves and their narratives and how that fits into what it is they're building. And then helping them with product launches and campaign launches. And
That's invaluable help. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like very, very much needed out in the world. So I get it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so Minnesota specifically is such a great place to be doing that work because we are so, we are a bit more quiet about our brands.
Pretty
and we
darn are more, reserved.
Yeah.
Right?
Hesitant to come out and say, yeah, this is me and this is how I do things and this is how
everyone's
it
worried they're going to offend someone or something.
Sure.
You know?
Well, no, it's not offense. We're not afraid of offending anyone. Mm-hmm. We're just like, we are afraid of boasting.
That too.
It's like mostly, it was shied upon for a long time. Like, you're not to boast or say how great you are, mm-hmm. right? That was...
The reason I say offending people is because I will get people after we record shows who email or call me and they're like, can you take out that one part where I said this one thing? Because I'm worried that like my cousin is going to be offended that I said this thing in it or something. And I'm like... You know what? No one cares. You're going to be okay. It's, you know, you can allow yourself, whether it's a little bit of boasting or a little bit of like, you can allow yourself to have an opinion. Mm-hmm. And if people don't love that opinion, like, well, talk to me about it then, you know, maybe change my mind a little bit or something, if whatever it is, or just let me have my opinions and understand I'm not trying to hurt you or be bad. I just have an opinion about that thing.
And that's where we can all be benefit by permission to be curious, right?
Yeah.
You said this thing. I'm so curious.
I love the curious part.
Tell me more.
Let's learn more about it.
Tell me more.
Yeah, let's have a discussion about that.
So your company helps people express their own curiosity into the world in a certain way.
In ways, their curiosity and more than anything, their expertise.
Yeah.
So what is it that you're creating in the world? What is it that you're improving for folks? And then helping them to be in conversation with folks, whether that's through branded campaigns or media placement for...
So are you mainly on strategy or do you execute for them as well?
We're mainly strategy. Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of the contractors that we'll bring in are helpful with execution.
Okay. So do you package that in your services?
We do.
Perfect.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we talk about this. Like,
we do, yeah.
Like marketing is this sort of big nebulous thing that it can drain the resources of a company so fast and then they don't see any results because some of it takes so much time mm-hmm. for it to actually take effect. You can't get the word out about something and expect like, you know, everything to go viral and everyone's going to understand exactly on day one what's happening. But people, they understand that they need marketing, but it's very difficult for them to find an entry point where they can go and I know you're not a marketing agency, but you're a PR, right? Mm-hmm. And well, what is the media part? Is that sort of on the marketing side of things,
so
too?
So media relations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because once they get you out there, you're going to be dealing with the media. No, I'm kidding. They send stories to the media.
Right.
No, I love it. But, I mean, that's a nearly impossible world to navigate for most people starting out. And entrepreneurship... oddly enough is sort of in and of itself an equalizer. Like most entrepreneurs, have or are about to die on the same hill as all the other entrepreneurs. They're like, because they're doing the thing, and it doesn't matter what your background. You're just the person in the community that's like, I got to do this thing. And then you go out and do it, and you don't know who to trust. You don't know who to tell your ideas to. You don't know who's going to take money from you and take advantage of you, or who's going to actually help you push you up. And, you know, so that is, it is, there is a leveling of it. Now, there are certain instances where people have advantages over other people, and those are the networking and connections and stuff like that generally, or the modeling that they see throughout their life.
Right.
But would it be fair to say that you would be someone, your company, Laurel, would be a company that someone with an idea could come to your company and you would start to give them some information. You would listen to them and you would start to give them some information that might help them while they're doing this stuff.
We're a best fit for people who have a product.
Okay.
And maybe have an idea for how they want to get it out in the market and need to test the bounds of that or strategize how to effectively execute that. And so we partner with in-house marketing teams, or of course, then we're able to bring in our trusted partners to help us execute on these campaigns or perhaps the ideas that founders have to get their product to market. And so that's where both personal branding is really important in creating a relationship with folks who your voice resonates with just as much as actually taking a product to market with paid ads and awareness and placement.
I mean, that's an incredibly direct answer, to be
honest. Well, it's true.
Yeah, no, I mean, so you're saying don't come to us at idea phase. Come to us when you've already got a product, generally speaking. When you've already got a product, you've already got a brand, you've got a thing, and you need to move to the next step. Is that
absolutely.
More or less correct? Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Yep.
You were going to say something. I'm sorry. I just was curious about that because
I'm just so impressed. So where are you going? Where's next?
Mm. Yeah.
So a few things. We've been having a really great time. You had mentioned our leadership profile series, Rising Icons, and that's been such a great way to not only meet leaders who are on the rise. Some of them we've worked with. Some of them have come to us through nominations or community introductions. But I knew that community has to be the center. And because we focus so much on leaders in the work that we do with brands, We can't pitch everybody, but one way that we could accomplish getting their name and their product and their brands out is by creating some sort of owned channel. And so we have this daily series that we run. But some of the benefits that maybe I didn't ever understand or hadn't intended rather to see come from this is we're asking about which publications they want to be in next and which journalists they would like to be interviewed by, just as much as we're also asking about them and their businesses. But it's rare, in my opinion, especially in our ecosystem, to see where people were 5 or 10 years ago to where they are today or where they might be going. We're really good at the snapshot, but as entrepreneurs, another part of representation is the journey. Like, okay, can I do this? Can I be like you? Because I'm just here right now and I don't know.
Well, it's an underreported part of it.
It is.
Too. I mean, it's like if all we ever see of anyone is like when they've finally achieved the success, then we're all like, oh shit, I must be a total failure because I've been doing this for X amount of time and I haven't yet achieved that success. I did see that part of your website. I don't look at much before I have people in. For whatever reason, I saw you nominated, or someone was on it that I was looking at and I saw the thing and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And it's a nice way to be able to highlight some people doing things in town without it being overly gratuitous or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's national. The leader was on today is in Los Angeles and started as an inclusive staffing agency in a different way. And it's really interesting. But to be able to storytell that way and to do a service to the journalists that are in our network and invite new folks who are reporting to be within our network, and more than anything, get these stories of entrepreneurs told.
God, it almost sounds like a podcast.
It kind of does.
It really does.
It actually sounds like she's like needling her way into our world.
I know.
She's
pretty much stuck with us now.
Oh, well, no, what I mean is she's going to overtake us.
Oh, well.
I'm just
different
kidding.
Different channel.
Yeah. No, I'm totally teasing. There's so much room out there in the world for us as entrepreneurs and other to help other entrepreneurs and to, you know, help ourselves along the way. Like, we all need to be pushing each other. The hill is way too steep for us to go it alone.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I appreciate what you were doing there.
Thank you. So that's one channel, and we've had some really great partners come alongside us to support those folks. But we've also opened up a PR at your fingertips option. And so something that I knew I wanted to affect after having the opportunity to work with so many founders at Beta is a way for folks to walk through storytelling and understand some of the early activities that they need to do to get themselves and their business even on the radar of journalists and editors and producers. Yeah, simple things like Google Business and correcting profiles and understanding the core components of storytelling. And so there's a platform that we've been building called Make the Headlines that is just that. It's intended for folks to be able to come in, self-serve, understand what part of their growth they're looking to affect, and then provide the basics of information as well as our partners. And then
love that.
It's been fun to build.
You know why that's impressive is that you know entrepreneurs need it, young companies need it, and you're not charging them a full public relations strategy package to give it to them.
Right.
So you're still a profitable business and you're serving a community.
Absolutely.
Yeah, love that.
And then we have a group of entrepreneurs from that space that have been curious but are looking for more high growth. It's called the Billion Circle. So collectively, that group is working toward an earned 1 billion earned media impressions per year. And so some of them are way beyond where I thought they would be, even in February. And others are just getting started, but those are folks who maybe aren't ready for an agency retainer but need help with personal brand. And so to be running those two groups has been the joy of a lifetime.
I love it.
Absolutely love it. And then, of course, we've got our retained work with the campaigns.
We're getting into the realm of things I don't understand.
Oh, sorry.
No. It's totally cool. It's just like that we're going to have to...
Yeah, we have to.
Call it quiz. I know you have to be at your next thing. We're 45 minutes into the second half. We've done this.
We've did it.
We had some fun.
But you opened up questions there because the end of that, like, it's losing me as far as me understanding exactly what all of that means to these companies.
Do you want the, why didn't you just say that version?
Because I'm a dude, and I don't say things the right way. Like,
I can provide that context in less than 45 seconds if you'd like.
You do it.
Okay, earned media. So earned media is what we're focused on. That is media like...
I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
This is earned media?
Sure. It's your channel, and you're here.
Wait, now, but who's earned what?
You earn a story. Like, so, say...
This is earned media for you, though,
yes,
correct?
Yes. Correct.
Like, you earned this by being someone that we sought out, saying, there's an interesting person.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was my question. Who earned what? You earned this.
Well, she's also saying we earned it, too. So we
could
use this podcast as a way of getting a story out there.
Right, but...
So because we have a podcast...
Conversely, wouldn't we want some other larger news agency to say, have you guys checked out this podcast? It's cool, and they've interviewed these other cool people. Like, where's the earned part? I'm confused.
Here's the last 30 seconds. The four types of media that you want to focus on. There's earned, owned, paid, and out of home. So out of home would be billboards and advertisements.
Yeah, just sort of passive stuff that sits out there. Yep.
That can draw back to your owned channel, which might be your website or your social media pages.
Are we owned?
We have our
own. I feel like we're more owned, right, than earned.
All of these are at play for you. So these are the different types of media that you can consider in an advertising strategy. So then there's also paid. And, of course, we all know what paid is, where we're either paid.
That one's easy.
I'm not making
everyone
any assumptions.
Everyone wants paid. I mean, everyone wants you to pay them to get the word out.
But advertising that you pay for. So whether that's online placement, print ads.
That one's easy. I got that one.
And then we talked about owned, so website, social media, and then earned would be validation from an outside source saying, either can you comment on this article as a source, or perhaps can we feature you? There are many other ways.
Are you validating us by being on our show? I love it. Thank you.
Oh, so he's catching up.
I'm catching up. Well, this is not my world, you know?
Thanks for inviting me to be a part of yours today. This has been so fun.
I'm excited to be your new friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got a lot in common, we learned.
I know.
All of us, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Everyone to always be friends.
Oh, my God. You're so altruistic. It's amazing.
No, I mean, this has been tons of fun. And we're going to check back in with you in 6 months or a year and figure out where you're at.
Sure.
Like, and vice versa, I guess, or vice versa. You know.
You know, this has been a lovely time.
you close it out.
I've made a lot of scrunchy faces at you today.
I don't know why.
Maybe it's my...
You came in skeptical of me.
I did.
Yeah.
There was something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
good.
It's a day.
Shalisa,
I just, thank you. I thought I was taking it out. I thought you gave it to me.
Oh, yeah.
You had to take it out.
No, you do.
Shalisa. I'm really impressed. And I learned a lot today. I think our listeners learned a lot today. So, Laurel, I'm in. Thank you. And we're out. Don't cry. It's over.
Oh, you did it. You made it to the very end of the show. And you know what you can do to help us? What can they do to help us? They can tell their friends how awesome this show is.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
You know what else? And I don't know if people know this or don't know this, but like if you found us and you see us on socials somewhere, just hit repost or share it with your community.
Share, repost, follow. Isn't there a follow option?
Yeah,
of some
follow,
kind?
Subscribe. We're not going to charge you anything.
No.
Just hit the subscribe button.
No. We just need to create a community around entrepreneurism and how the real shit happens.
I like it. Well, because we're real. You said it in the intro.
Real, real, real.
We talk real. No, seriously, tell your friends. What a great show. Oh, my gosh, these people are doing the best work ever. Yeah, right?
That's what you should say.
Yeah.
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 And just come back. Have fun with us. We love this.
We'll have someone, we'll interview someone cool next week, too.
Someone completely different.
Yeah, from prison. Thanks.
You always have to have that.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.